Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. I'm excited to get into the phase of this podcast where I'm having more guests on. And today I have Lily with us. We're going to be talking about mast cell activation syndrome. We know this is a common comorbidity with vascular compressions in general. And obviously, speaking about my experience with Nutcracker, I'm also currently exploring superior mesenteric artery syndrome. But I'm excited to have Lily here. I've also just seen an allergist to get my tryptase done. And so we'll be chatting about that. I'm going to learn a lot, I know, on in this podcast. I hope others do too, and that there's value added to this community. So, Lily, thank you so much for doing this episode with me.
Yeah, Simone, this is great. I've been trying to give a lot of thought to what would be the most helpful things to share. So hopefully this will
Yeah,
help other people.
absolutely. Yeah, and I know that like when we were kind of chatting initially, some and I felt this way when I started the podcast. It's like, well, I'm not a doctor and I don't know. But as we all know, like those support group Facebook pages are almost so much more helpful than the doctors themselves. Like, and I actually think it's more powerful coming from a patient that has navigated this space and that can really empower other patients to go in and know exactly what to ask for. Like when we were messaging on Facebook, you were like, hey, make sure they do this particular level. So I knew to go in what language to ask so that they were like, oh, okay, this patient has done their research. And I felt like all of that. So just tell us a little bit like about yourself. I know we just kind of prior to starting the recording, we talked a little bit
That's
about
good.
your journey. Just tell us a little bit about your journey with the compressions, mast cell activation, whatever you'd like to share.
So I live in Hawaii on the Big Island, and it's pretty remote, relatively. I'm outside of Hilo. And I started dealing with symptoms. I have two kids, and I am currently 38. So when I was 28, 10 years ago, I started having nausea and fatigue. And I grew up blue collar worker, all the things. And my husband's like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just feel sick all the time. It's like being seasick or hungover or something. I don't know what's wrong. I am nauseous all the time. It's like first trimester pregnancy. I don't know what's going on." And this progressed. I worked with doctors and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I worked with a naturopathic doctor for a few years, and it was like, I had H. pylori. Okay, let's get rid of that. I did so much work on my gut biome. She's like, "You shouldn't be nauseous anymore." A couple years in, I'm like, I don't know. So I was getting really frustrated with, just, someone help me. So I went to another doctor and they're like, "Well, I think that you have acid reflux." And I'm like, "I don't think I do, because the other doctor says my GI tract isn't doing enough." So they put me on like proton pump inhibitor medicine, and I got just like a ton of abdominal pain. And my doctor, I was so mad at her, and I was just like so frustrated with not getting answers. And she tells me, "Just go to the ER. Like, I don't know. Like, go to the ER and they can do all the tests. Like, I can keep referring you to tests, or you just go to the ER and they'll," and she's like, "or double your dose of the medicine I was on." And she's like, "If you double your dose, it shouldn't be doing this." And I'm like, "I can't double my dose. I'm in so much pain, man." But this whole journey, this was like 6 years in. And at this point I was losing weight. I lost like 20 pounds in a few months. And it was just like, "Oh, this is not good." And I wasn't looking healthy. And anyway, going to the ER was the best advice that was given to me. They did a CT scan. It was very obvious. I had this big glowing L coming out of my kidney, my renal vein down my ovarian vein was just the they, it was like dye that they put into you so the CT scan can see, and this dye is just reflecting this big glowing L, like no one could miss it. And luckily, because some people actually do miss it. There was a traveling doctor, and he's like, "This is Nutcracker syndrome, and I'm going to refer you to a vascular surgeon." And I went to the vascular surgeon, whole time fighting insurance, of course. And they did the venogram, and then my vascular surgeon was great because she didn't have any, she didn't know a lot about vascular compressions, but there was like an online, forum where they could submit cases for patients. And so she submitted my imaging, and she's like, "Is it okay if I submit your imaging?" And it was like a vascular surgeon in Alabama that was like, "I think she also has May Thurners. You should look at that too." And she would never have looked at that. And so then we were able to see May Thurners and the Nutcracker compression. And then I was offered left ovarian vein transposition. And I was just, it was going to be like a full open abdominal surgery. This would be in like Honolulu, Hawaii. And they do have great hospitals, but they don't have. But they don't have the laparoscopic technology. And I was just reading in the Facebook support groups about the success rates of stuff. And I was just really hoping I was a one and done. Like, you get the Nutcracker diagnosis and all of a sudden you have this acronym attached to your name, NCS. Okay. Then I get the Mathurner's diagnosis. All right, I guess I have another one. Because you see people introduce themselves in the support groups and they're like, hi, my name is da da da, and I have NCS and MTS and PCS and MCAS and MS, that you all the things and POTS
Yes.
and all this stuff. And I'm like,
Yes.
I'm only one of these, right? Like, that's not me. I only have one of these. And
Same.
so it turns out I had Nutcracker, and then I had Mathurner's, and then I had pelvic congestion syndrome. And I was dealing with all the POTS, which now this is, I had my auto transplant in 2021. I kind of forget about the POTS stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, every time I stood up, oh yeah, it comes back.
Yep.
The dizziness, the where the symptoms progress to. Nausea was always my biggest one. But then it was fatigue, and then I couldn't lay on my left side. Anytime I laid on my left side, I thought it just felt like I was going to puke. Like, I just couldn't do it. There was like a deep internal pain. It wasn't a sharp pain on my left side, but it felt like this deep internal pain. My left hip pain, achy legs, heavy legs. I started having left side headaches, left side sensitivity on my head. I started getting these aura migraines, and then all the POTS stuff. So just it progressed. It was kind of like prayer, divine intervention. I didn't know what to do, and I got a hold of a girl on our Facebook and the Renal Nutcracker Syndrome Support Group, named Heather Hines. And there had been it was over. I was diagnosed December 10th with Nutcracker Syndrome. I'm like, is this a joke? Okay, so Christmas time, Christmas story about Nutcracker Syndrome on the news in New York, and I saw on this YouTube video this girl being interviewed who had worked with this local surgeon. So I actually reached out to her over Facebook Messenger. Had a phone call with her, and she gave me the contact information for Dr. Grodstein in New York. And that just opened all the doors because his office was familiar with the rarity and how hard it is for patients to get help. I did not need any referral. I am on the opposite side of America, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, to all the way to New York City. And he did two, he looked at all of my stuff. We had two teleconsults. He was able to advise my primary care physician what testing I needed to have done so that I wouldn't have to fight my insurance company, that like we could pave the way, get all of the information, and then submit for the prior authorizations. I got three denial letters before I finally got an approval to work with an out-of-network doctor. And I didn't care anyway. I'm like, I'm gonna die. I felt like I was gonna die. Like, I'm so sick. I'm in bed constantly. You know, I have two young kids. I'm like, I thought I really wanted to donate my kidney, but that wasn't in the cards for me. Did the split function kidney test, the nuclear test. You talked about that on your podcast. So my left kidney was doing about 60% of the work. They were not willing to take away 60% of my kidney function. So I flew to New York, had the transplant, stayed for 6 weeks until I could fly my 13 hours back to Hawaii. And I thought it'd be better. I'm like, I'm gonna be better. Here's life 2.0. Let's go. And still dealing with nausea. My low back pain was increasing. My leg heaviness was increasing. At this point, I had also been my vascular surgeon here in Hawaii had been. We'd been reaching out to another vascular surgeon at a University of Washington Medicine named Dr. Mark Meisner. And he, so I that kind of paved the way for post AT. 8 months later, I went there and had a stent placed for Mathurner syndrome, and I had some of my collaterals for pelvic congestion syndrome. They did like a foam embolization, and I then just continued to heal, and the nausea got a bit better. And all the other symptoms, you know, go away. The pain, the fatigues in getting better, everything continued to get better, but I was still dealing with nausea. And sometimes, you know, through this whole thing, you think, is it just in my head? Is it me? Is it something I'm eating? Is it like, you know, what's going on? And even though I'd had this diagnosis for 2 years, I kept thinking, I can't attach another acronym to my name. Like, it's
Yes.
not another thing. I started, you know, but mast cell activation syndrome kept coming up on my radar, and I just thought this, you know, this, I'm not, I mean, yeah, okay, so I get these patches on my skin when I get hot and flushed, and I do have a hard time with temperature, but I thought that was just a nutcracker thing. You know, because always the not that always the nausea, but you just don't know if that's enough of a symptom to be something. I didn't realize how big of a deal bloat was. I thought, you know, I've had a kidney transplant. Of course my tummy's bloated. You know, of
Yep.
course my stomach hurts. I couldn't, you know, I just bought my first pair of jeans like 2 months ago. And it's now 2025. Like,
Yeah,
I didn't realize
exactly.
like how tender my little tummy was. Until I finally started kind of opening the door to mast cell activation syndrome and exploring it.
So the mast cell activation was, so first step was the auto transplant and then Mayþerner's, which mine was opposite. I did the Mayþerner first because I was like, maybe it'll, I can get away with the auto transplant. Then the auto transplant. Now I'm on the superior mesenteric artery syndrome train. Well, hopefully that'll be, I won't get those letters after my name. With that being said, so then the mast cell for you was third step, where you started looking into that. What made
Well,
you look into it?
I did go the route of SMAS
Okay.
first because because so many people, because yeah, you have this narrow angle, right? And like so when I say narrow angle, I'm talking about like the renal vein and superior mesenteric artery. I have this re you know, this narrow angle. And so I thought, well, you know, my duodenum goes right through there. Maybe it's that. So I was, because I had already been working with UW Medicine, and I have to say, working with university hospitals, universities tend to have, for anyone out there who's just exploring their options, university hospitals tend to have the newest technology because they're the ones getting the funding, they're the ones getting the training, they're on the cutting edge of stuff. So once when I went to New York, I worked with North Shore University Hospital. So I was able to have like, you know, minimally invasive, which really helps with recovery time. So when I went and to University of Washington, that's kind of like it was, I felt like the closest. It was either there or there's another hospital in Oregon that I felt like would be the best bet with technology and stuff. So I, because I had my stint there, I was now in their system. So I could now schedule appointments with their doctors. So I started working with their gastroenterology team. I also pursued trying to get genetic testing done for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I was just like throwing spaghetti at the wall. Like, what is
Yes.
gonna stick? I really didn't think it was mast cell. I'm like, just because again, I for some reason I'm like, I don't know about this one. This one seems like weird. this one lasts for your lifetime. I don't know about this one. But the gastroenterology team, I did upper endoscopy and different stuff, and I did not have a compression of my duodenum. So that I explored that was a th I explored that next, and then I went on to look for mast cell activation syndrome. And what really finally clicked for me is that there was a patient and an academic who has Nutcracker syndrome named Karen Kirk, and that's Karen with a C. If anybody wants to look her up, and KIRK, and she actually has a paper under review. She's trying to get funding for research for, I think it's a doctoral thesis, or maybe she already has her doctorate and it's funding. And she was connecting why vascular compressions cause mast cell activation syndrome. And so she has this paper and she shared it with the group. And I read through this medical paper and or medical article. And have you seen this yet, Simone? Have you come across this
I don't
paper?
know, I haven't. Is it on
Okay.
the Nutcracker page?
I think it's on the Nutcracker page. It's probably also in the mast cell activation syndrome. I can look for it later. I printed it out, so I was like, oh, I have to remember this author's name. So what she how she linked it, and I think this is really important because the thing about having these rare syndromes is people who have mast cell activation syndrome, when you go into those support groups, majority of the people say that they got this because of if it's there's different things, but specifically mast cell activation syndrome, not mastocytosis, not you don't have this genetically, but you this came on during your life, something caused it. Well, a lot of people get it from mold toxicity, or they had a bad infection, or a severe reaction to antibiotics. Something like that will cause mast cell activation syndrome. For people with vascular compressions who have mast cell activation syndrome, it is, I would say, it's relatively a common comorbidity of abdominal vascular compression syndromes. However, if for mast cell activation syndrome, it is a rare way to get mast cell activation syndrome. So to already have a rare syndrome and you get it in a rare way, the doctors and the information out there who are studying it, You really got to pick through it because not a lot of it explains, like, why would I have this? And I think that's why I didn't really embrace, like, dive into it. It kind of was the last thing on my list. But so what Karen wrote about was that when there is this, you have this compression of your vein, and then there's this back pressure of blood. So there is a high concentration of mast cells in the epithelial tissue alongside the inside of veins. And when there's this increased pressure of blood, they degranulate and release histamine. And this is what is softens the vascular tissue so that it can create collaterals. So if you have a lot of collaterals, your body has your mast cells have been working and doing what they're supposed to do. They're creating these new veins to return blood back to your heart. And if they've been activated for a long time, and other mast cells in your body are going to react to this degranulation. That's like this, you know, this communication thing's happening between your cells. So if this has been happening for a long time, even after the compressions are fixed, they may continue this activity or this activity in different areas. So I've always noticed with my GI tract, you know, how I get stomach aches or where I bloat or different stuff. I think that my I thought anyway that my that what was going on was pretty like in a specific location. And I you know, I'm like, oh, this really tracks with what Karen wrote because I had a lot of collaterals. And I've also noticed that people have like different types of collaterals. Like some people have like angel hair spaghetti collaterals. They're really thin. Other people, myself, have these big fat caterpillar collaterals. My collaterals were not small by any means. My veins were huge. So my body was, you know, that's just, so I don't know if that, if other people, anyway, I've just noticed that we have these different collaterals and I do think it affects what comorbidities we end up with. But so I'm like, oh, this has obviously been happening in my body. Like there's evidence, there's imaging, this is what's been going on. So that's when I was like, oh, I need to pursue testing for mast cell activation syndrome. And then it was like, well, what does that look like? How do I find out? And there's lots of different ways that people can test for mast cell activation syndrome. Sometimes they do like colonoscopies and they take like a scraping. That's a way to confirm it. There's some ways that they're like, well, you have to have A and B in order to officially have the diagnosis, you know. And but one of them is a blood tryptase test. There's also a 24-hour urinalysis. The 24-hour urinalysis is not as accurate as the tryptase, and the blood tryptase test, they usually take it like one time and then a few weeks later another time, or they recommend if you're in a flare or if you can do something that puts you into a flare, then get the testing done. So I went to my I had a really great primary care physician. I found her in my journey. I was like, I need a doctor who's willing to walk with me because I have a lot of issues and I don't want to feel guilty for like calling you up. Like I need somebody who's interested in learning. And I was recommended a doctor. It was a female doctor, and I knew another lady who worked with her and was like, I think that you guys would work together because she's interested in learning. I'm like, I need that because I'm on this is something for my life. Like I've now had a kidney transplant, I've now had a stent. Like I need somebody willing to keep going with me because I don't know if anyone else out there feels that. Like sometimes they're like feeling guilty because they're calling their doctor because they're so needy. But like I needed somebody I wasn't gonna feel guilty calling, who wasn't gonna write me off. And so she was my person and she's like, okay, we need to work with all of these tests that I brought her. She's like, you know, you need to see an allergist. And oh, so then I got referred to an allergist. Again, I'm in Hawaii, so like the pool's not that big of physicians. Like it is what it is. And and the allergist I got referred to, I'm not sure how much of my notes she read. I don't know. I really had to push for what I wanted. She definitely was like, well, I don't really know. I don't have you worked with a GI doctor? I think you should work with a GI doctor. I'm like, okay, can you just put in the blood work? And so she did eventually put in the blood work. And for me, my tryptase levels came back high. And so the high normal, I should say. I can't remember what the line is. I think it's like 8.5, and mine was like a 9. And then the next time I did it, it was an 11.4. And the next time I did it, it was a 14. And with all of those, I know they say you should be in a flare. When I got like the 11.5, I was having a great day.
Okay,
I
that's
felt
so
fine.
interesting. That's so interesting. So I this is such juicy information. First of all, I want to that article. If you'll send it to me, I can link it to
Absolutely, yeah.
the show notes. I think that's like you did such a great job of breaking that down. Because I'm sitting here like my mind's blown. I had both the caterpillar, both the angel hair, it collaterals. I actually didn't until recently, 5.5 months, 5 months post-op, I got a second opinion from a new IR, and he went fine-tooth comb through my CT, the one I was diagnosed with for nutcracker, and then the one I had 1.5 months after my auto transplant, and he was showing me some collaterals that none of my other IRs or transplant team had even like pointed out. And he was like, see, you can tell that these aren't as dilated anymore. So that like affirmed my decision to do the auto transplant. But hearing about how the mast cells are there and the degranulation and they'll stick around after, some of my continued GI, which is like major loss of appetite and nausea, continuing to lose weight, I'm like, maybe it's the S mass, or maybe it's mast cell. And so it sounds like for you and for me, I was referred also to an allergist, so that's kind of the doctor to go to, it seems. Were you also recommended to see anybody else for the mast cell stuff? I've only been told an allergist is who to go to.
Yeah, I've been told an allergist, but I mean, anyone can prescribe that. And that's a funny thing about mast cell activation syndrome is like once you get the diagnosis, you don't need a major surgery. Like you need medicine and you need a diet change. So like pretty much you need education, and then the ways that it's treated are pretty minor. So like people will usually go to an allergist. I've seen people work with a cardiologist. I've seen people in the group work with their gynecologist. I've seen, like, if you have a doctor that's willing, like, if you can't, I think most people can't get to an allergist. There's lots of allergists out there. Even the allergist I worked was reluctant, however, got me to where I needed to get. And then I could go back to my primary care doctor and take what I know. So I'd say the number one is an allergist, but also other doctors can prescribe blood tryptase level tests. Other doctors
For
can
sure.
prescribe 24-hour urinalysis, if that's,
So for the testing, so just so everybody knows, I'm on my mast cell activation possible diagnosis journey. I just had my tryptase done last week, and it just came back as a 4.9. So it's considered normal. It's not, or at least I haven't had my follow-up yet, but we all know we go to the internet immediately. So it seems like it's normal. But even hearing you, my allergist didn't say, oh, we'll do a couple different tests. He just was like, we'll do a one-time blood draw. I'm now going to follow up. He's amazing. I love this allergist. I'm going to follow up and say, hey, I've been hearing from a couple of people. Will you reorder it and then let's do it again? Just to give us the validity and the reliability of having multiple data points. So if mine keeps coming back low, then okay, cool. That's really good too that you said the time that you threw the 11.4 or whatever, you weren't in a flare, because some of my research was
Yeah, I felt
saying,
great. I was like, oh, I feel good today. And I was like, oh, even
that's
after you're
also
on the medicine, your tryptase levels still stay high. Like your body still,
interesting.
you're just
Okay.
taking medicine to deal with it. Like you're still degranulating. But you, because like even now on medicine, like when I was on medicine, I also got those higher numbers. Like it doesn't mean it goes
Okay.
away. Like it's just what's happening in your body. But
Got it.
also, I think you can have lower tryptase levels, and that doesn't necessarily rule it out. It's just a strong indicator. Like if you have that high number, this is what's causing it. That's where tryptase
Okay.
comes from. But there's also other ways to test to see if you have mast cell activation syndrome. So,
So, and you said one of the other ways is the 24-hour urine test. What are they looking for there?
Oh, I don't remember. I had read. There is a newspaper. It's controversial because of politics. However, they have a great health section called the Epic Times, and they did a whole thing about mast cell activation syndrome. And I could possibly send you a link to that, but it may be an article that's not free. I'm not sure. But they had a really excellent write-up about the different tests. And specifically what they were looking for and breaking down, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head just because I've been diving into other stuff for a little bit
For
now.
sure. Well, and honestly, I mean, because we all do what I just did, which is go to Google and type in 24-hour urine test for mast cell activation syndrome. And
There you
it
go.
just, it says 24-hour urine test can be helpful in diagnosing mast cells by measuring levels of mast cell mediators such as histamine. N-methylhistamine and prostaglandin. So it seems like there's some aspects within that urine test. This is what I would literally walk in. So knowing that, I think I'm gonna go back to my allergist and be like, hey, can we do the also 24-hour urine test? I'm very much like you. I would rather let's exhaust, leave no stone unturned, let's exhaust everything. I want to do all the tests, not because I'm searching for a diagnosis, but I just want to be confident that it truly is a no, you don't have this. It's not, there's this one doctor on Instagram I just started following this. Talks a lot about POTS and MCAs. And he said he was like the tryptase level. He's like, I kind of, yeah, I draw the blood test, but I have a lot of people who it comes back not elevated. And then, but we still put them on the medicine and their symptoms go away. Like their GI stuff will go away. So the tryptase isn't a, it's not the gold standard really. And there's still so much we don't know about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Were there other testing that you did other than the tryptase and the 24-hour urine?
No, I was after I had the tryptase, like I said, about like with mast cell activation syndrome, I'm gonna like say the whole thing or MCAS because I can get like confused for mastocytosis, which is like the genetic one.
Oh, that is good to know. All right. I did not know
Yeah,
that.
because there's yeah, because people will have like similar symptoms, but you get in these like mast cell support groups and people are dealing with like anaphylaxis, and even
Okay.
doctors will be like, well, have you dealt with anaphylaxis? And it's like, okay, like my doctor even had the genetic testing done for mastocytosis. But I'm like, I have all of this stuff that shows that this is probably why I have this. Like, thank you for ruling that out. But these are two different things. Like, they have
Okay.
similar symptoms, but they come from two different paths. This is a genetic
Yeah.
disorder. This
Okay.
one came on because of what happened in my body, like a physical thing
Okay.
that happened later. So, anyway, so that's why I say mast cell activation syndrome. My doctor recommended, she's like, just take Pepcid AC and see if you feel better. And I, because I deal with so much nausea, I'm very like, I'm just not going to put something new in my body. Like, I have a hard time with that. Once I had the tryptase level test come back, that made me feel like, okay, now I'm willing to try something. And with the Pepcid AC and then like an antihistamine. So with mast cell, you can take like a Zyrtec or a Claritin is what's recommended. Like a 24-hour, I think it's like Lotrimin, 10 milligrams or something. I'm not a doctor. Okay, here, I'm just a patient. But these things are over the counter. They're cheap, like, at any pharmacy or grocery store. And then Pepcid AC, and you take one in the morning and one at night and see if that helps. Not see if it changes all of your problems. See if it helps and, and track yourself. And so, after my first blood work came back, I was like, okay, I will try taking a medicine, even though I feel like really anxious about taking things because I feel sick all the time. And it helped a little bit. And I was like, okay, I can like that whole appetite thing, like, oh, I feel like eating some food, that kind of stuff. Something I brought to my allergist that, the thing with this is, there's food, there's histamine in foods. There's histamine in food leftover, like leftover foods. Like after a few days, they have more histamines. There's foods that makes your body release its own histamine. It's called histamine liberating foods. So even with when I started taking medicine, so that was just the Pepcid and the Claritin. That's like if you are willing, and if anyone's out there is willing and they think they have this, for 2 weeks, you could take Pepcid and Claritin morning and night and just track and see how you feel. Or maybe a month. I say that because I'm a girl and I've noticed my symptoms really change with my hormone levels. Specifically, when I'm ovulating is the worst. I'm always super nauseous on the day that I ovulate. Now I've been on Pepcid and Claritin, although now I'm like kind of weaning myself off Pepcid because I don't think I need it all the time to the same degree. If my symptoms are better, I don't take it. If I'm struggling with nausea, I'll take it again. And I'm also taking a it's called Cromalyl sodium oral solution, and this is a mast cell stabilizer. It acts as like a internal like ointment. It's very little is actually absorbed into the body, and what it does is you take it on an empty stomach, and it coats your mast cells and your GI tract, so that when you eat food that your mast cells would react to, they wouldn't react as much. So with doing all of this stuff, I still have to be careful about what foods I eat. It's not like a I think I was hopeful that like, oh, I can take medicine and I'll just eat what I want.
Yeah.
That's not the case. I was reflecting and preparing for this, like visiting with you, and I really it made me kind of see this syndrome as this spectrum. Like, where do you land on the spectrum of mast cell activation syndrome? And just like Nutcracker, I wanted to be a one and done. Like, boom, do this, I'm fixed, we're good. I think it also depends on how long you've been dealing with these compressions. I went 10 years without having it, you know, before I like 10 years of symptoms before being able to have the auto transplant. And so, you know, in another year before getting the Mayfairners dealt with. So, like, my body was dealing with this internal stress for a very long time. So I think that I was a lot sicker than I ever thought I was. And my syndromes are maybe more severe than I realized because I just want to, because I'm a normal person, right? I'm just normal. Like, how can things be where they're at? But anyway, so I always want to go to like the least of things, but I kind of view mast cell as like this spectrum. So I started with Pepsid and Claritin. And I was trying to learn about, you know, low histamine, no histamine foods and diet, how to do that. But it's like a huge learning curve because it's almost like you can't eat anything. It's how it feels sometimes. And then I got on the Cromalyl sodium oral solution. This is a learning curve in itself. There's support groups for people who just take Cromalyl. There's one on Facebook called Cromalyl Users, because when you start taking it, you sometimes can't start with a full dose. You're taking these liquid vials that have to be like kept in the dark and at like a specific temperature. You have to take them mixed with room temperature water, like a half a cup of room temperature water. You have to take it 4 times a day. You have to take it at least a half an hour before you eat. It's just like this, like, ah, like, how do I do this? One person, I think it's in the Chromium user support group. It might be one of the administrators, actually has a in the files section. There's a PDF of her schedule. Like, this is how, and that was really helpful to me because at first I'm just like overwhelmed with taking this medicine. And then, you know, now it's like I have it by my bedside. When I first wake up, I take it. I wait a half an hour. I have my coffee. I go about the day. So I essentially take it at like 6:30 in the morning, 11 in the afternoon. Like, if I get hungry, I have a small snack around 10, and then I take it at 11 o'clock. And I'm able to have, you know, I wait half an hour or longer and I eat lunch. And then I'll take it again at like 5 o'clock before dinner. And then I take my last dose right before I fall asleep. So I have like two things of it by my bedside. It's like, how do I take it when I'm in town? Well, I got a small Hydro Flask bottle and I pre-mix it and I keep that in my purse so it doesn't get too hot. And all these things, it's like, it was a lot. So you take that, and then you have to learn about also how to eat. So that's where I am on my what I'm learning is like I have to take these medicines. And then there's also a lot of supplements you can read about that help with mast cell stabilization. There's one called quercetin. Quercetin, you can buy it at health food stores. It could be mixed with bromelain from pineapples, but you can always find a citrus-free one. Well, turns out citrus is a histamine liberator. So, like, there's stuff with mast cell where it's so hard to navigate what triggers you because it's stuff like that. Like, you look, well, I'm trying to take quercetin, but I was taking the one with bromelain, so it was giving me a stomach ache. And then I learned, oh, I shouldn't be eating anything with pineapple, even a derivative of pineapple. So I get the one that's citrus free. Okay, now this has helped supporting me and having less severe flare-ups. Like, I used to take Zofran at least once a week, if not more. I am now not taking Zofran like at all. Like, maybe occasionally, like maybe once every 3 months or something, I'll feel really nauseous. Or, I mean, I like alcohol's a histamine. Like, that's the big, all alcohols are a big histamine thing. Wine is really bad. Clear liquors are better. So I was like, out with the girlfriends, I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna have like one martini, you know. And I think that was a night I had to have Zofran because it was like, oh, I felt so sick. Dang it. Dang it.
I
But
know the
it's
feeling.
so hard. But it so it's hard. But when I got diagnosed with mast cell in October last year, and I have been figuring out how to take the medicine consistently, and so it helps me. I have added in quercetin over time because, again, I'm very hesitant to add things, and vitamin C. and a good multivitamin. I'm on low dose baby aspirin for the stint, but all those things help with the mast cell. And I found this really helpful app. You're going to have all kinds of links I'll share with you. It's
I
called
know.
Intolerant app. And it was actually made by like a techie computer programmer guy who has mast cell activation syndrome. And it
Okay.
is an app where you can scan barcodes or scan ingredients, and it can tell you if, because also gluten, like I've been gluten free for also a decade, because start getting sick, eliminate gluten, and all these
Yep.
things help. It's like everything has helped, nothing has fixed it, everything together is fixing it. So it's not a, there's no one and done. It's like you just keep going and it keeps getting better. So this Intoler app, I can scan ingredients, so I can pick up something at the grocery store and scan it, because there's stuff that you think you could, like I thought, I shouldn't say you, I should say me, that I thought I could eat, and I would scan it with the app, and like oat milk. Okay, so I do oat milk and I'm scanning these oat milks. Well, a lot of oat milks have riboflavin. Riboflavin is a histamine, has histamine in it. So it's like, oh, this brand I can have, but this brand I can't. This is like, I've just had to give myself so much grace. My family's very
Yes.
understanding. Like, luckily my kids and my family, I can tell them I don't feel good. Like I'm trying my best to feel good, but
Yeah.
I will, or like overripe fruit. I ate some blackberries. I was fine. A couple days later, eating the same blackberries, they made me feel sick, because overripe fruit then is producing histamine. I have found that I can eat leftovers 2 days old. Stuff that gets to day three always upsets my stomach. So sometimes
This
it's not
is
like the specific food, it's like things about the food.
so crazy. I have to share this with you, and I can't wait for Kyle to get home today. I'm gonna rock his socks off. And the reason why, I hate leftovers. I don't like them. And not this isn't this has actually been more of a new thing. And I never made the connection, and now I'm connecting the dots, because some of me eating the food, like, it's almost like the smell of it, and like when I would eat it, I would immediately get nauseous. And then I just would be, and he'd be like, "You don't like leftovers." And I remember being like, "No, I do." But like, I'm seeing a pattern because he's pointing it out to me, and I'm like, I cannot wait for him to get home and be like, "Actually, there's a reason why." I'm also noticing the same thing, like with fruits. It's like anything that sits around. So this is very eye-opening for me, and it gives me like, instead, not Kyle doesn't make fun of me. Some of it is like, yeah, get that to go because I'll just eat it later because I know you won't. But hearing you say this, I'm like, gosh, the citrus. I was down in Mexico. I used to live out of a van full time for 2 years, and I was down in Mexico exploring around, and I've never had any problems. This was actually back when all my symptoms started for the vascular compressions, but I had no clue they were there. And I was eating pineapple like crazy because we're in Mexico. That's what you do. And my tongue would get itchy, my lips, and I remember being like, when did this happen? And now I'm like, oh, this, I'm noticing citrus, grapefruit. We just got grapefruit a couple, started getting it a couple months ago. And I was like, oh, this is also like, I've never had a reaction. So all this has just been really helpful, you sharing this for me personally, selfishly, me getting stuff out of this, and knowing the language to talk to them about and say, hey, like, I'm noticing in the last couple of years, citrus, or when the vascular compression started, at least symptomatically, that I am feeling allergic to, I have these flares with citrus stuff, right? This leftover thing, like, Kyle's jaw is gonna drop. I'm gonna be like, I have a
It's not just me,
reason.
babe.
Yes.
It's
Like,
a real
he jokes with me about it. It's kind of like a running joke of like, you don't like leftovers. And I was like, yeah, but now you're saying this, I'm like, gosh, that's so crazy. I just saw the Intoler app on here, so I'm so stoked you recommended that. Because I'm gonna start using it now. I am curious too. So one thing, talking about the medication, you talked about the Zyrtec Claritin Pepcid AC combo. And you said one in the morning, one at night. Is that like take a Claritin in the morning and then the Pepcid AC at night type of a thing?
No, like you take both. Like I could take it. I take a 24-hour Claritin twice a day. So I
Got
take
it.
one in the
Okay.
morning and one at night. I take one, and I always take it after I eat breakfast, because I don't like taking things on an empty stomach unless it's required of me. Again, because I just have so much anxiety around food,
Yes,
because
same.
food often makes me feel terrible. So
Yes, same.
it feels really good to be able to eat and not feel terrible. Like I feel better today. And I mean, when I say today, I mean like relatively. Like I feel so good some days, and my energy levels are so good. And other symptom we didn't talk about, brain fog, like brain fog and
Yes.
fatigue. I used to eat lunch, and I homeschooled my kids, and it would be like after lunch, I would be exhausted. Like I have to lay down. I cannot do anything. And this is, you know, after all the surgeries and stuff. And now I'm like, oh, that's another mast cell activation syndrome thing. When you eat, if you have these flares, it makes you really tired. It can make you really tired and brain fog. And some days I am like, I cannot focus to save my life. Like, and I'm a
Yes,
pretty
yes.
organized person, and I'm like, wow, like, okay, this is. And then I just get, and then now I can just go, okay, this is what's going on, and just like sit with it. Like, I just have to get through this. I have to. And kind of going back to like the spectrum idea, like I, depending on where my symptoms are at now, I always take the Claritin. I always take the Chromalum sodium, and I'm always taking the quercetin, the vitamin C. When I'm having more symptoms, things I add on is now I add in the pepsidase. Now I add in, there's another one called DAO enzyme, which is the enzyme that breaks down histamine. And when I'm having a hard time, and when depending on where I'm at in my hormonal cycle, I've also taken birth control for a couple years, trying to help manage the nausea, because it was always worse when ovulating or when menstruating, or you know, it seemed to have some like hormonal, it wasn't always perfect, but seemed to kind of relate. Now I'm not taking birth control just because I take so many pills. I'm like, if I could take one out.
Yes.
But I can help with my symptoms by adding those things in when my body's more sensitive. And I'm more, even if I deal with a little bit of nausea, it's like a little bit of nausea and a little bit of fatigue instead of a lot of nausea and a lot of fatigue.
Okay. So
So.
it's the starting out when you said, like, 2 weeks, maybe even a month of doing the Claritin Pepsidase C in the morning and then Claritin Pepsidase C at night. So that, and that was something I'm kind of personally going to start just doing on my own and then collecting that data for me when I go back to my allergist. A asking, can we do two more tryptase levels 2 weeks just to get that data? I'll start the Claritin Pepsidase C, give him the info on that 24-hour urine test. Like, let's throw it all at the wall and see if maybe one doesn't point toward, mast cell, maybe these others do. Because I started, and I think it was hard. My first hives, like skin rash experience, was the day that UW Health called me to accept me for my in-person. And I remember Marcy calling and saying, "We want to invite you. Let's get you on the schedule." And I could feel my, like, I just got this sense of overwhelm. So some of it was like, is this anxiety induced? But now looking back, like heat intolerance, like you've talked about, the brain fog, like eating has always been sensitive to me. Us talking, I'm almost more on the mast cell train. I guess I got my tryptase back. I was like, oh, I don't have this. But now I'm like, no, I need to keep. I think the thing for all of us in the fat vascular compression space, for all of it, if it's a vascular compression, POTS, mast cell, EDS, keep going. Don't just get the one test and be like for me with my gallbladder, they did, there's like three different things you can do. And I was like, I want to do all of them to fully rule it out. Like, instead of just, and I think hearing you speak, I'm like, okay, I really want to make sure I'm doing all of this to fully rule it out or not. Or, I've seen some doctors, the one on Instagram that's like, yeah, some people, the blood works, we don't know enough about mast cell actually. That the blood work might not show it and the 24-hour urine test might not show it. But if you're doing the Claritin and Pepsidase C and it helps, then it's
Yeah,
a
and their
pretty good
diet, you know,
indicator.
it's
Yeah,
a good
and
indicator in the
diet.
diet. There's some other interesting symptoms now that I'm getting on the other side of it that I dealt with. Didn't know what even sometimes you know, you have things that have just gone on so long, you're like, oh, it's just whatever, it's just me. So some other interesting things, maybe someone out there will hear this or you'll hear this and relate to it, that I've come across. One of them is like I used to feel like I had to pee all the time. Like frequently, and it would like, and it wasn't like a bladder infection, wasn't like burning, wasn't like anything. It was just like this, like frequent, like, oh, I kind of have to pee, or I'll wake up like four times the night to go to the bathroom or whatever. So, bladder irritation is a mast cell thing. And
Interesting.
since I've been doing this, I'm like, I don't wake up in the night to pee anymore. like who,
Wow.
like what, you know, like things like that. I'm like, oh, this is a thing. I take my son to, like, he's in judo and that gym's kind of hot, and I always get this patchy redness blotching thing, and that is, I don't get that anymore since treating my mast cell. The abdominal bloating, my abdomen is like significantly smaller now that I know I'm not in a flare. And I thought for a little while there's foods that I love that I was just like, there's a really good like local sourdough, and I was like, I think I can do this because it doesn't give me like a stomach ache right away or nausea right away. But if I eat a piece of sourdough for breakfast, you know, I'll just do it for like 3 days in a row or whatever, because we'll have this loaf. Oh, I'm so bloated. And I was like, and I was treating the bloat. I was taking like activated charcoal and different stuff. And now I'm just realizing, like, I just really can't. Like, I just, it is so different. Like, where I look like, you know, I'm 5 months pregnant, all of a sudden I have like abs and I'm like,
Yes,
oh, you know,
yes.
like, how about that? Like, I didn't realize how bloated I was, and that I was like chronically bloated until now the bloat's going away. And one of the biggest things that I thought I was, that for a long time, I've had these episodes where it's always around 2 in the morning. I would wake up and it would feel like I had to go to the bathroom, and I would get really clammy, super nauseous, and it'd be in the middle of the night, and I'd get shaky, and I'd just be so nauseous. I'd be like waking up my husband, please get me a cold washcloth for my forehead, like get me a bucket, get me like, and I have had this, I don't even know how long, you know, like, but for a long time in my life, like years, I've been dealing with this, and I didn't know what it was. I've told doctors about it. They don't know what it is. So apparently, our mast cells, like, they release histamine, and it's part of our sleep cycle. And when we hit REM sleep, they'll degranulate and release histamine. So if mine are, and mine were dumping way too much into my system. So I would wake up at 2 in the morning with like this. And so it was always, and so it was always right when I fell into deep sleep, and it would happen pretty consistently, at least like once a month for years. And now that's also something that I haven't been experiencing anymore. So it's these things that, you know, like, how would you, there's no specific one book, this is what mast cell looks like. It looks so different for so many people, and not a lot of people out there have it because of vascular compressions, but a lot of people who have vascular compressions have it.
Yeah.
And so
Oh my gosh.
it's like, you just start treating it, and it's a really big learning curve, but that's
Yeah.
okay. You know, you just do your best and keep going.
Yeah, I know. I tell people I feel after this auto transplant, I feel like a truly a different person, and in a lot of good ways because I feel good. But like the foods I used to love prior to the auto transplant are like make me nauseous now. Like even just the smell of them. I sleep later now. I like everything about me is different, it feels like, and I feel like I was born like a baby, and I'm learning who I am. And like hearing you talk about like learning what you can and can't eat, like that's so overwhelming. I'm one of those people that eats the same thing, kind of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Just kind of meal prep. It's easy. I don't have to think about it. And now it's been so overwhelming because I'm like, I have to like complete. I've been working with a registered dietitian, my friend Tracy, that I had the episode with. She's been amazing on this vascular compression journey. But it's a lot. It's very overwhelming. Like you said, now having to go into a, like I downloaded this app and I'm all excited, but I'm like, oh, this is going to mean grocery store trips are twice as long because you have to check everything.
Yeah, until
And
you know your stuff. Like, I've
yes.
made a list. I have a list on my phone. I feed a family of four, right? And then my
Yeah.
parents live with us half the year, so then it's six of us. Sometimes it feels very overwhelming, and I am a meal planner, and I will get hungry and I'll eat things I shouldn't, and I don't feel good. And so this is a new thing in this, like, in this journey. This is where I'm at right now. Is, hey, okay, my family keeps coming, it's a little distracting, sorry. So where I'm at right now is, I had a list on my phone previously. I called the dinners, and I had 21 dinners, and so I could put it into this meal plan, and I'd make five of them a week, and I'd have 2 days of leftovers for my family. This is before mast cell, so I've had to change those dinners because there's so many things that I'm not eating. So I started
Yeah.
trying to make a list of new dinners, and it's taking me time to add to these dinners. But I'm finding things that I can make, and I'm having to change the oils that I use. I'm having to not use pepper. I'm trying to use a lot of fresh herbs. I'm changing So it's like learning, it's like going to France and now you have to learn how to cook French food. Or you moved to
Yes.
Taiwan and those are your new ingredients and you have to learn how to cook like that. It's like now I have to learn how to cook a whole new way that I've
Yeah.
never, and it's like a whole new education. And so, but I have a running list in my phone of the dinners. And so when I come up with another one, I add to it. And I think I've got like seven right now. But I'm like, okay,
Good.
my family likes this. I can eat everything here. And so that's a go-to. And I keep a list of foods that I like to eat, can eat, or good, like good snack foods. I go through these antihistamine cookbooks and lists of foods. And so I can keep, because it's like stuff I never snacked on before. I used to think I couldn't have cream cheese. I used to think I couldn't have dairy. But apparently cream cheese is low histamine. So I'm like, let's try it because maybe the stuff I thought made me sick, it was something else making me sick. So now I'm doing
Interesting.
like, those rice cakes with cream cheese on them and cucumber slices and salt because that's an
Ooh.
easy snack and I can have it in my fridge and it can be right there. And hey, that's pretty tasty. And so I'm finding these things and I'm keeping them on my grocery list. Because when I first
Love
got the
this.
Intoller app, I went to the grocery store and I'm like, I'm going to figure out what I can eat. And I left so depressed. I'm like, I
No.
can't eat anything.
Yeah.
Ugh, like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Because it's like, can't have guacamole, can't have salsa, can't have hummus, can't do canned beans, can do dried beans. So it's like, I guess I need to be more prepared in my cooking. Like, but then can't have them as leftovers. I have an entire shelf in my freezer. It is my shelf. This shelf in my freezer, I have like a side-by-side freezer in my house. And I'm like, this is mom's shelf because I freeze things in sandwich bags. I'm learning. It's just like this whole new learning thing. Ground turkey, because you need to have like fresh meat and not really what this does too is it makes you, I mean, like I like whole foods. It makes me eat. I've always already eaten pretty healthy and now I'm eating even healthier. So it's like ground turkey. I'll take parchment paper. I bought like a 5 pound thing of it. I take an ice cream scoop, just my parchment squares, and it's like scoop of ground turkey, smash it, scoop of ground turkey, smash it with another paper, scoop of ground turkey, smash it, put it in a Ziploc, put it in the freezer because I can pull one out, thaw it out, and cook myself ground turkey. And the other day it was shredded cabbage and salt, and I can do fresh mozzarella slices. I've never eaten a lunch like that before. It was delicious. It was healthy. It was low histamine. If but it just takes so much planning and preparation. But then I feel great and
Yeah,
I'm up late
good.
with my family having a good time and I'm not like, can't wait to get to bed. If I am really want to eat something that it's like this might set me off or I'm trying something new or it's just a food I really miss, I eat it at night. Because I know I'll have a stomach ache, but I'm going to bed. So it's okay.
Yes.
At least I
I
can be
love
in
that.
bed.
I love that. Yeah, and I think it's the preparation stuff that can be overwhelming because when you're not feeling good, you don't have a lot of that energy to really put into wanting to do those things. For the mast cells, how have you seen them change since you got your auto transplant? You got the May Thurner stent. Did you see them kind of decrease a little bit after addressing those?
I don't know. I mean, I would say maybe like I've always had nausea. I had less nausea, but it was not gone. Like, and it was always worse, when I was menstruating or ovulating. Like, I mean, that's like taking Zofran in bed with a washcloth on my forehead, kind nausea, like that degree of nausea. Like I'm really good at not throwing up, I'm really good at breath work. I keep Altoids in my purse that tends to like give me like a little hit of like okay, calm down or something, I know that doesn't work for everybody. But it's hard to tell. I feel like this was probably my first symptom of Nutcracker because I always had nausea and it's been my longest one and the hardest one to get past. Do all this stuff. In the beginning, it's always been trying to fix the nausea, and then symptoms got worse and worse, and more symptoms got added on, and all those symptoms have gotten fixed first, and I'm left with nausea.
Yeah, that's how I am right now. It's like that loss of appetite, nausea, and I've was reading about the GI issues associated with it. So I think I'm going, this has been so like informative just for me. I say these episodes are, especially when I have a guest on, it's kind of selfish. But I know it adds, I mean, there's a lot of viewers that listen to these, so I know it'll add a lot of value. Are there other thing, is there something you wish you would have known prior to starting your mast cell journey?
Okay, thank you for saying that. Let me check my notes and my phone here.
Yeah.
But I don't want to miss anything.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I kind of hit all of the points that I really wanted to make sure that people knew that it's not a one, it's not like a, it just looks like this. Like mast cell's tricky because it looks like so many things. And you know, in your journey, Simone, you may have mast cell stuff. You probably do have some degree of it because your mast cells are degranulating and helping create collaterals so that your blood can circulate, you know. And did they calm all the way down? Are they done? You know, did they reset? You know, maybe, probably a lot of people's do. You know, you may have SMAS. SMAS is also something that happens to different degrees. Some people have it so severely, you know, they cannot eat at all. Some people just have a little bit. You know, so you, and then it's like you may have both, and that sucks, you know, and all of this sucks. Like,
Yes.
so it's like you can't, you just have to keep going. I have prayed my way through this, and I've had so much divine intervention and doors open, and that's been a huge part of like keeping me moving forward. And my hope is that the right doors have opened and other doors have shut. And but it hasn't made it easy. It hasn't made it obvious. It hasn't made it not scary. But you just keep stepping forward, and you just don't give up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, I have so many people reach out to me either on Facebook or Instagram, and they'll say, I was offered a surgery date, but my symptoms are really mild right now. I don't know if I should do the surgery. My philosophy was always, if there's something wrong with my body, that means like my body's compensating in some way. Like, go get it fixed, go get it fixed. Because the month leading up to my auto transplant, I actually felt really great. It could have been we started a new medication regimen with like gabapentin and stuff. So that could have been at play. But I remember also kind of psyching myself out. But even hearing you talk about the mast cells and talking about like the degranulation and the collaterals, I'm like, I feel like this just contributes to even more reason to go do that surgery, because go get it fixed so that your body can breathe again, your blood can flow properly. My symptom, I became symptomatic 2.5 years prior to my auto transplant. Obviously the compression could have been there the whole time and the collaterals could have been created, so it's hard to know. But like for you, it sounds like you were symptomatic for how long? For like six,
I
ten
would say
years?
10 years I had
Yeah.
symptoms. 6 years they became debilitating. Like 10
Okay.
years of like, okay, I'm starting to feel like kind of nauseous, you know, whatever. I just, you know, you just roll with stuff. But then
Yeah.
6 years of like I, you know, I steadily started needing more and more help, like
Yeah.
to maintain my family, my kids, my house, my whatever. Like I started losing abilities to, you know, getting to a point where I'm spending most of my time in bed. And anytime I'm out in public, I'm enduring,
Yes.
and using coping mechanisms to just get through the grocery store, get through driving my car, get through, and the whole time thinking, I'm not that sick.
Yeah, absolutely. Same,
So, but it was a long
same.
time. And I think
How,
like I had pain underneath my left rib since I was like in junior high. And I thought it was a sports injury. And I just always had this slight pain under my left rib. So the more I, you know, and I had all these weird little health things that came up when I was a kid. And so now talking to my mom, and we go back through my medical records way back. So I think that I'm somebody who, you know, if, you know, there's other people out there who've had less symptoms for a shorter amount of time. Like I agree with you. It's scary because an auto transplant's a big surgery. It's a newer surgery.
Yeah.
You really want to work with a surgeon who knows what they're doing. You really want to get the best technology, the least invasive. Like you really, like it just keeps getting better and better. You really want to make sure, if you're going to get a hybrid AT, that you don't have May Thurners. Like if they're just going to move your kidney down on your left side, that's where it's like you have to have a lot of faith in the doctors that you're working with, and you really have to do your research. But it really seems like the longer that, and especially in my case, the longer that you have these compressions, the more damage is done, and you really do want to get it dealt with. And that's a hard pill to swallow, and it's a scary one. But everybody has to make their choice on their own. It's like you don't want to just trust any doctor. Like, okay, the doctor says this. Great. Take that information and then use your own brain and think what's the best. Don't just use the doctor's brain and go, well, the doctor says this, so this is what I should do. Because some people, there is some stuff I've seen. I follow Dr. Kim, the guy who does all the who was with the Maryland Medicine, anyway, the hospital in Maryland and Baltimore. He talks about there are some people who've recovered without getting an auto transplant, who like, and I don't really know, that to me seems like the, I don't know, like maybe that's the rare of the rare of the rare. I'm not sure. So you really want to, not take it lightly by any means, these decisions. But if you definitely have a nutcracker compression and this is definitely going on in your body, you definitely probably should deal with it,
Well, and
because
I'm
this
almost
stuff's
thinking
tough.
it is. And I feel like some people, I mean, I ditto everything you said. I feel like some people, there's so the fear of
Fear.
the complications gets in the way of them actually getting the treatment they need. And so they go months, if not years longer, waiting to get it until they are in truly like super, super debilitating pain. And then that might lead to them like for me, my mast cells were very, very active prior to the AT. And then I had the AT and I really, all my POTS symptoms kind of went away, although they're kind of starting to come back a little bit more now. The
Shucks.
mast cells starting to come back a little bit more now too, but not to the same degree it was. It makes me wish I would have gotten a tryptase test prior to see to do the data to compare and contrast. But yeah, if the so many people are asking me, should I do this? Should I do this? And A, I can't really tell them the answer to that. But I'm also just like, well, if you keep waiting, your body is going to break down more and more. The mast cells are going to get to where maybe they don't reset. It is more of a lifelong thing. The pot, the impact on your heart. I mean, vascular is your whole body. That's your plumbing, of the blood. So it touches everything, which is why, like, I had all these musculoskeletal issues, pulmonary embolism issues. They didn't feel vascular related. They felt like, headaches. So then they would send me all these different doctors, when in reality it was just, and they told me when they did the auto transplant, all we can do is tell you that the left flank pain is going to go away. We don't know what else.
Right. You're
And
like,
then
cool, great.
yeah, but I was like,
Thanks.
cool, I'll take that. And I did wake up. It's like I'm not, most all my symptoms did disappear. Now I think the S mast might be a culprit. We'll see, or it could just be mast cell. But continuing to just keep advocating, get all the tests, walk in. I'm very much like, hey, I've been on a journey, it's been a shit show. Can we, like, when I went to my allergist, I was like, can we do all the standard allergy testing? Can we do the tryptase? Now I'm gonna message him in the portal when we get off this and be like, can you schedule me for 2 weeks apart? Can we do a 24-hour urine test? Just kind of get that plan rolling. I know he'll be supportive of that, but you don't know what to go in and ask for until you know what it is. So this has been so valuable, what you've given. Is there anything else we haven't covered? I think you said you went through and said we touched on most of what you
Yeah,
wanted to
I
say.
think we did. Everybody, you got this. That's what I tell people. I'm like, you got it. You just keep going, because it's our life. You just have to keep going, and then just put grace all over yourself when you're starting new medicine. You can't quite figure out the schedule, and maybe you're messing it up. It's like you just do your best, and you just
Absolutely.
keep. It's just like you just practice, and you keep getting better. In your situation, trying to figure out if it's SMAS or if there's so many acronyms. It's like,
I
which one
know.
is it my mast cells or is it my duodenum? I don't know. Or it's like if you have a duodenum compression, eat low histamine, like, and it's still gonna bug you. You
That's
can
a good
just
point.
take stuff out. It's like, don't eat leftovers, eat rice and fresh meat and fresh fruits, but no citrus. Don't eat spinach. You know, there's like vegetables, like look at the basic list and just like, hey, I'm gonna put the work in for a couple hours and make a meal plan for like a week, because SMAS, like that's every day, you know, that's an everyday thing. So it's like if there is no changes, you know, or depending on how you know yourself, because some of it's cycle, some of it's whatever, but it seems like, because that's another physical thing, that you just eating, because that's the thing about, you know, mast cell is there's so much we can figure out on our own. And it's like where we need the doctors is like, for me, where I need the doctor is for getting the prescription mast cell stabilizers. Like it was great for the confirmation. I needed that confirmation. It really like, okay, I'm walking through this door now. Like that's the door I'm going through. But if you really think you have this and you can't get the confirmation, like, you know, there's so much you can do that you don't need a doctor's help compared to everything else I've been through. Like there's, you know, there's a lot you can do. And then, yeah. And then really it's like, you know, I use my doctor to get my prescription for chromium sodium. And that's, you know, that's what they're there for. But that's only one small piece of how I treat my mast cell activation syndrome.
Absolutely. And in a way, it's like nice to hear that because you don't have to like fight with the medical system for it. But then at the also the same time, it's a little like, oh, this is a lifestyle change. That's
It's the
a huge
biggest
thing.
change. Like the surgery, the auto transplant, that was huge because it's a 7-hour surgery and that's a scary business. Like, oh, I'm getting an organ transplant. Like, how do you, that's like a big, like, how do you, I don't even know how to explain that to my friends. I'm like, how do I describe this? You know, and you go through all this other stuff and it's surgeries and it's sedation and it's needles and it's hospital rooms and it's overnights and it's, and with mast cell, it is a marathon because it is your whole life. It's like, this is, some people say mast cell activation syndrome goes into remission. Hey, I'm hopeful for that, but I know that this is probably something most likely that I will be managing for the rest of my life, and that part's hard. It's way easier in the everyday, but it's every day for the rest of my life compared to really, really hard. Go get a major surgery, recover from a major surgery, but now you're past it. This is like, this is the one thing where, you know, you just gotta keep in it every day. It's like having, maybe it's like having diabetes or something, I'm not sure. But it's
Yeah, I
just.
also think too, hearing you say that, like obviously I just posted about the mental health stuff, me being a psych professor and really thinking about like if you get diagnosed with mast cell, really any of this, like I'm just such a like, do you have a therapist or are you working through something?
I saw a therapist for 2 years after my auto transplant. Because I, you know, yeah, for 2 years, it really helped me. I definitely had some like post-traumatic stress after the surgery. Like I would just start like erupt, like sobbing, like these sobs would come up out of me, like out of nowhere. And it was like, what's that? Like, you know, and I'd have these flashes of, I have really bad vision and I had to, you know, take my contacts out and no glasses. And they have me in this robe and I'm walking down this, like, you know, this hallway into this OR. And I would have these flashes of that. And it was like, so, you know, and so much stuff's happening, dealing with the Matherners. I would, you know, have to go to town and go, I kind of live out of town a little ways and I go to drive to town and go to the grocery store. And every 2 hours, I would have to get off my feet for 30 minutes. If I would lay horizontal every 2 hours, I could get through the day. And I had these timers set on my phone. And it really helped to have a therapist to talk to about this because I really didn't want to burden my family any more than I felt like I was already burdening them. I think that was the heaviest weight on my heart, was feeling like I was a burden to my family. And I just needed someone to, I guess, really talk to. We talked to about the pain dance is how I got to that place with my timers. It was like, I have to do this dance with my pain. And you know, and now I haven't seen my counselor for a year. Because I got to a place where he's like, I think you're good. But it took 2 years of therapy. You know, like it was so hard. It was so hard.
It is. No, it, I mean, hearing you say that, I feel the same way. I met a inpatient. I went to the gift shop and there's another transplant patient in there and we started chatting and he had already been a transplant patient, like a double lung transplant, and he was back in there for something else. And he was like, "Hey, don't underestimate the anxiety and depression that come after this." I remember being like, "Well, I'm not a traditional transplant patient. I don't have to be on the immunosuppressants and stuff." And I get what he means now. Like I just started antidepressants. I've been seeing my therapist and stuff, like that PTSD is very real, the acuteness of it, and then also maybe looking down the barrel of this other, like the SMAS. Like I realized my depression started coming back in when I was going back into like seeing my cardiologist, going to allergist. Like I just felt like I was right back in pre-Nutcracker auto transplant, just doctor appointment after doctor appointment. So the I'm very pro, like while you're going through this, anti-anxiety meds, antidepressants if you need it, just to like help you acutely through this process. I was somebody who was very much like, I have all the coping resources. I'm a psych professor. I teach meditation and mindfulness and breathing techniques and all this stuff. And I remember it was my primary that was like, hey, let's do this GAD-7 assessment, the general anxiety disorder assessment. And I was like, yeah, sure. And it was like, you have severe anxiety. And I was like, oh. And that's when I was like, yeah, let's do the, kind of middle road anti-anxiety med that really just kind of helped me. I think to some extent it also helped with the mast cell. Like I'd stopped having the hives and the skin rashes too. So yeah, all of this has been so informative for everybody. Thank you so much. And also just for me, again, selfishly, I'm like, I feel so empowered speaking to you, knowing what to move forward. I'm gonna get off here, go to my medical portal, message my doctor and be like, hey. So I hope the same for other people. Other people, if you have questions, comments, again, drop them in a comment on the episode. Obviously these Facebook support groups are very helpful as well. Any last words you have for us?
Yeah, I think it was really good how you touched on the mental health stuff. It's like just give yourself what you need. I took time between surgeries because I did not want to get poked with one more needle. I'm like, no, thank you. And then, and just speak what you need. If you're in an outpatient procedure and they're saying that you get to go home that night and you're just not feeling it and not feeling good, let your medical professionals know. You know yourself better than anybody else. And you just keep advocating for yourself and don't feel guilty. It's like this is, and then I think allowing ourselves not to feel guilty allows us also to like, we can look around at all the people around us, and majority of people are also going through stuff that they're trying not to feel like the same way we do about. So it's like, I think most people, like at least half, it's like, oh wow, like this is the chronic illness thing is,
It's
we're all in it.
exhausting.
It's exhausting. We're all in it. There's a lot of people doing it. So just like, don't feel that, try not to feel that guilt. And yeah, take care of your mind along with your body, because it's all connected. And
It is.
be
Yeah,
patient with
absolutely.
yourself.
Yeah,
And
well,
we'll all
thank
get through
you.
this and we'll help each other
We
out. So thanks,
will.
Simone.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that was another thing with this podcast is it was a way for me to continue processing my own journey and feeling like I'm adding value in a different way than just
Yeah, no, this is
posting,
so good. I wish there was a pot. I mean, I just went through this like, not that long ago, but now it's like 2025. And for me, it was like, oh, 5 years ago, like it would have been really great. I just had the little Facebook resources and so now it keeps growing. And I think the more information out there, the better, because I don't think we're as rare as people think.
No,
So
I don't think so either. I think it's rarely diagnosed. I don't think it's actually rare. My gynecologist is who helped me. She advocated heavily for me to even figure out about that. I didn't know vascular compressions were a thing, and she referred me for it. And I now her and I are like, pretty close as far as the like doctor patient relationship goes. And she's told me when I go back in, she's like, your whole like I've really helped her. She's like, I've been able to, help other people get diagnosed, refer them. She's spoken with the ER team at the hospital she's at. The ER team is now looking for it when they have people come in. And it's just that's really helped me feel like I've like, okay, my scenario and the sadness of my story and losing my uterus when I didn't need to and things like that. Still feels like, this podcast, I'm adding value. Knowing that Dr. Muldoon is like, your story has been such a linchpin for my career and then helping other people. And I think you've been sharing yours with just the vascular compressions in the beginning and talking specifically about mast cells. Like, I don't think people sometimes it's so overwhelming because you don't know where to start. And sure, the support groups are there, but just this episode alone is it made me feel empowered. And I'm very much a data gatherer. Like I go and find all this
Heck
stuff.
yeah,
And
it
yeah,
helps.
you're yeah, it really does. It keeps me busy. It makes me feel like I'm being active and proactive instead of just sitting around wallowing in the
Whenever
pain.
I'm laying in bed not feeling good, I'm like on my phone, like, okay, internet and ChatGPT and all these things and
Yes.
diving into resources and the support groups and what looks like me and what,
Same.
yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this
Yep.
episode. This has been
Yeah.
wonderful.
Cool.
And I'll reach out to you too to just add in the show notes some of the things you spoke
Yeah,
about to
remind
get
me what
links
links
to
and
them.
stuff you want. I'll
Okay.
try to track them down.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Simone.